Hi, I'm Darren Perry, and you're listening to Gospel Tangents.
Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. The Shoshone tribes numbered in just a few hundred people when Mormon pioneers settled in what is now northern Utah and southern Idaho. We'll talk about what Native life was like with author Darren Perry. He's the author of The Bear River Massacre. It's a fantastic book. You should get it, by the way. And we'll learn more about what life was like among his people in the Shoshone tribe. Check out our conversation. And oh, by the way, if you want to see the whole interview, sign up either at youtube.com/gospeltangents for just $8 a month, or you can go to our website, gospeltangents.com, click on the subscribe button, or you can go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and you can sign up for just $8 a month to see the entire interview. We're going to visit the actual massacre site, and so it's going to be kind of a fun field trip. Anyway, now let's back to our conversation. So I know in your book you talk a lot about your May Timbimbu. She was your grandmother, right?
Yes, she was.
So so tell us a little bit more about some of the stories she tells you in the book.
Yeah, I was fortunate as a young boy because my parents both worked. I was the oldest, first born to my parents. But they were both, my dad was an educator, so he didn't make hardly any money, and my mom supplemented their income. But they needed somebody to tend me, and so they dropped me off to May's house, my grandmother's house. So, I mean, I was raised in a home that, when I walked in, it smelled like smoked buckskin. I mean, that smell permeated everything in her home. And she'd be at the kitchen table right around the corner with a pile of beads. And she was making necklaces and sewing moccasins and gloves and putting this beautiful beadwork on all the things that, for the most part, she'd just give away to people she loved and admired. So her home was a classroom. Out back, there would be 10 to 20 deer skins in various forms of brain tanning that she herself would do, scrape the hide from all the hair and sinew and brain tan these animals so she could have the leather to work with. And, you know, that's how I grew up. I thought every grandmother's home was that way. She had a small garden, and the most favorite thing for me was the rhubarb. She grew rhubarb, and she would always cook it down and put a lot of sugar in it so you could actually eat it. And so, but I liked it off the stalk, and I talk about that in the book, about, man, it makes my mouth just pucker. Now, thinking about taking a bite, looks like celery, purple celery, but doesn't taste like it. But just growing up in that culture and hearing the stories about, you know, how the coyotes stole fire. And we actually published a book that's on the shelf over here a few years ago as a tribe about how the coyotes stole fire. And all of these books have animals and characters that speak. And that's how we disseminate knowledge to the children. It's almost always immersed with the coyote and the stink bug and the porcupine. They're in every story you could imagine. So they tell the story. They tell stories about being honest and just ideals that you'd want your children to know and learn. But they were told in such a way that they were told by animals, because the animal kingdom is just part of life. It was as much a part of life than being human was. And so she really instilled in me a desire to just want to learn everything I could about our culture, how we live differently. I remember the pot of stew, and I tell this story in my book. There was always a pot of stew on the stove. I mean, every day that I was there, with homemade hot bread. And I asked her one day, why do you always have the same pot of stew on the stove? And she said, because in our culture, you never have anyone in your home without feeding them. And I, you know, as I gotten older, I didn't think about it then. That made no sense to me then. But it made sense to me now that she lived and her parents and grandparents and great-grandfather lived in a time and place where they were probably hungry more times than they were ever full. And so the fact that that was an important thing when a visitor came to your home or lodge or teepee, that you fed them. If you had anything to feed them, you fed them because they needed it, first of all. But it was just a lesson on how to take care of one another. And so let me tell you, my grandmother, being the historian she was, she had visitors every day. So now I know why the pot of stew is there. Guys like Brigham Madsen, these great historians that ended up writing about the Bear River Massacre, would visit her home because she was the subject expert and she was the primary source. With a culture that doesn't have primary sources, people ask me all the time, well, where's the primary source on that? Well, when you have oral history, that's the primary source. And so it's just different. But I remember her just being so passionate about her people and wanting to share that knowledge. I said in a Facebook post the other day that something she always told me, she would always say that no one has ever wanted to hear our story. And she said, one day you will have to make them listen. And as I was writing that book, I thought, this is part of that. But the funny thing is, she had to really work hard to get people to want to hear what she had to say. I don't have to work that hard. I think we live in a time and place today that people are genuinely interested in Native American culture. And so as I've gone around and traveled and spoken and done firesides, people genuinely want to hear about this Native American culture that they know very little about. Because what they got in high school and elementary and the history books is not the culture. It's not accurate. And so, so grateful for May and my grandmother for her wanting to get the history right from our perspective. And that's what the books tried to do. And that's what I've been working hard on trying to do, is make sure that knowledge gets out there.
Well, and I remember in the book, you said something about you went to school one time and they were going to talk about Native Americans. And you said, oh, finally, I'm going to hear the stories my grandma tells me. But that's not what you heard.
No, it's not what I heard. And so I was a sophomore. And the teacher said, next week we're talking about Native American culture. And Monday we'll talk about the Shoshones. And I'm thinking, because I mean, I was a Shoshone kid, but I wasn't like, not a lot of my friends knew. It wasn't something I talked about every day. And it wasn't that I wasn't proud of it. It's just, you didn't talk about it. And so I thought, well, good. My close friends knew, but I think people are going to hear about my culture. Hear all these things that I'd grown up listening to, because I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I loved the culture. And then the first day she starts talking about Shoshone, and it's like, what is that? There was nothing she said that day that resonated with me.
The teacher.
And she's telling me about my culture. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. This isn't right. It's not accurate. And how can we do this? She's teaching it out of a history book. You would think if it's in a book, it's accurate, but that's not the case. And then in the book, I say, you know, I had a conversation with another teacher one day, and he told me about Winston Churchill, and who said that history is only written by the victors. And it made sense to me at that point why Native American histories are never written, and because we never won. And so those history books are being written by colonialization. I mean, people that, you know, absolutely are on the other side of history, and they're trying to tell our story? I don't think so. And so my book and just speaking a lot is to make sure that people understand our history from our perspective. And really what's important to me is not so much, the history is important, I don't need to have buy-in from you whether you believe what I'm going to tell you is accurate. I never get hung up on that. But it's important that we at least share the perspective that we have on our history. Now, once you have that and you have the other side that you've always been taught, now you can make a better decision on what you think may have happened or didn't happen. But I think, you know, in history in general, the more perspectives you have on any given event or anything that's ever happened, the better off you are able to make a good decision on what really happened. And what really happened really is left to whatever perspective you have in life, how you were raised. If your father was a racist, a flaming racist, you're going to hear something a little different than how I hear something. And so my big thing with the book and anything else is, look, I don't care if you believe me, but it's important that you hear how we felt. And so as long as you do that and you listen to it honest and openly, then wherever you end up in this spectrum of truth, it is okay with me. But I want to share a perspective that's never been shared before.
Yeah, well, great. Well, so I understand you are a sixth generation Mormon.
Yeah,
is that crazy? Not many people can say that.
Yeah, even some of the early pioneers' descendants, they're about there, you know, five and six generations. I heard a guy say he was running for office this year, and one of his things, and it wasn't me and it wasn't my race, but one of his things was, I'm a fifth generation, you know, Utah, and which he was trying to say, hey, my parents, you know, my ancestors came with Brigham Young. And I'm going, I'm a sixth generation Shoshone Latter-day Saint Mormon. And that is really kind of crazy to be a Native American and be a sixth generation Latter-day Saint. And so, yeah, 10 years after the massacre, Sagwitch has a dream and, gosh, ends up joining the church from it. And so from that point on, all the generations after Chief Sagwitz have been active LDS members of the church, and some more active than others. But and even me in my life, there's been times when I've been much more faithful and lived the life than other times. But
So Chief Sagwitch was back six generations, and uh-huh. He was. So let's talk a little bit about the massacre. Okay. Before we do that, I remember when we went up in November, one of the kiosks said that you were part of the, and I can't remember how to say it. I want to say N-E-W-E.
Niwa.
Niwa. Thank you. Niwa. I knew I was going to say
that. It's N-E-W-E. Niwa means the people.
The people. That's what the Shoshones call themselves.
Niwa.
And so how did you ever find out how you guys got the name Shoshone?
No. In fact, no. Apparently I've got too many things in my life to remember things. I'm not sure. We also call ourselves Shoshone. I've heard some of the Eastern band refer to themselves as Shoshone.
Okay.
Now, that is just a term for Shoshone, but I don't know where that originally originated from.
Okay.
I've not heard any oral histories or stories about first being called that, but we actually go by Niwa. The Shoshones do. That wouldn't mean anything to anybody else, but Niwa to the Shoshone, it means the people.
Okay.
Them.
Okay. So do you have a sense how long the Niwa were in Cache Valley before the pioneers came?
Well, that's a good question. And we know Sagwitch was here, so he was my great, great, great grandfather. We know his parents lived here because we have their names, and they're crazy hard names. It's hard for me to remember them, but we know Sagwitch's parents lived here. So I can imagine generations even before that lived here too. They were just never written down. So
okay.
we don't know, but I would
say... They weren't into genealogy back then.
No, or writing anything down. But after our conversion, we start keeping all these records like the LDS people do. So we're very knowledgeable. And thank goodness to Sagwitch, he did the temple work for almost all of the people that passed away at Bear River that were murdered. And we have a ledger with those names in it that the Logan Temple found a few years ago. And so thank goodness they helped build the temple, and thank goodness that he went in and did the work for those who had passed on. And he did the work for his parents. So that's why we have that name. Uh-huh. We don't have anything past that, though. So I don't know if he didn't know. It's just hard to say.
Yeah.
Speculate on.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with author Darren Perry, author of the Bear River Massacre. In our next conversation, we're going to talk about how Native Americans reacted when Mormon pioneers settled in Utah.
And so Peter Mon always referred to Sagwitch as a friendly one, which tells me there were other groups up here that weren't near as friendly. Pocatello's band, and especially Bear Hunter's band, were really adversarial to the pioneers. They'd steal things as often as they could. They didn't want their presence here at all. I think Sagwitch had a little more inclusive demeanor. I think he probably knew it was inevitable, and it was better to try to get along than to fight it. So...
thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, sign up at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and for $5 a month, you can hear the entire interview without any interruptions. If you'd like to see the whole video, that's just $8 a month, and you can sign up either at youtube.com/gospeltangents or on our website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button. Or you can go to patreon.com/gospeltangents, and I'll just need to make sure that we're Facebook friends, and I'll add you to our insiders group, and you can see the entire interview uncut. If you'd like to get PDF transcripts of our interviews, those are just $10 a month. And for just $15 a month, I will send you paperback versions of our transcripts as soon as they come out. Or, of course, you can buy them on Amazon as well. Go to Amazon.com and do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all of our transcripts there. Don't forget to sign up for our updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Of course, you can follow us at Gospel Tangents on Twitter. To hear our interviews updated to your podcast player, go to tinyurl.com/gospeltangents and make sure you give us a 5-star review. And of course, you should show your support for Gospel Tangents with one of these cool t-shirts, like this green one, or light blue, sport gray, royal blue, purple, of course black, beautiful gold, and of course Utah red. I've probably left out some colors, but if you want to see more, go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get one of these. So once again, thanks for listening. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some more of our great videos. Thanks again.